I'll start with the set aside prayer. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help me to glorify your message today. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, now tonight we're on step 10 and the steps we took. Margaret's on. Tell Lyle I sent him 5 more podcasts to put out. And I'll have all the steps we took, and I'll put them out on the site in order.
You got it.
All right, sweetie. And we're on step 10, and then we'll do 11 and 12. It's really good stuff. And then we'll go back to the big book, and we'll pick it up with how it works. And we'll go through the instructions on steps 3 through 12. We didn't cover much on Saturday because I babbled a lot about where the step 10 is in relation to the other steps, and I sent it to Grady and he listened to it and said it was pretty good, so it was a good review. Step 10 is the key. Getting to page 85, I read it with Jason tonight, is the recovered promises. I want to be in the world of the Spirit. In the world of the Spirit, I can get the Spirit's power. It's available to me. And I need that power to live, and I need that Spirit to direct me. Now, you can call it God, or if you're religious, you can call it the Holy Spirit. Doesn't matter. You want to not live in your world anymore, because it won't work when you're living in your world. And so the steps in the book takes us from the beginning to page 84, and we get the promises that are read at the meetings. And they're really the promises of the Spirit, because everything that those promises are is what the Spirit does for us. We know peace, we know new freedom because of the Spirit. And it's not that we have achieved anything, we've allowed the Spirit to work in our lives, and that's what it looks like. Now, it says we want to continue to do to have those that experience in our lives, right? So we have to learn to grow in understanding and effectiveness of living in the world of the Spirit. And that's what step 10 is all about, how to live each day the best you can with God in peace and of service to others. And then let's say you make a mess of it today. Well, then you got tomorrow. And step 11 is where you inventory at night how well you did. And then step 11 has some meditations and some prayers that we use to keep us focused on our goal each day, which is to stay in contact with my Creator and grow in His image and likeness, and to practice His character. Does this make sense? So we'll pick up on page 124, and it says, our steps work along the design of life. This is nothing new. This knowledge is as old as man himself. The power of it is that through the first 9 steps, we have put our lives in order. Remember, we put our lives in order in the steps 1 through 3 with God, right? Because we make a decision that I'm not going to be God anymore. It's not that complicated. And why don't I want to be God? Because it didn't work. Because a life run on self will never be successful. Now, the book doesn't really tell you that till page 60. But they're hints. Jason and I started through the book together. They're hints of how your life is unmanageable in the first 57 pages and doctor's opinion. And then the bewilderments, which is the picture of a life run on self-will, are on page 52, the manifestations of an unmanageable life. And so we've made that decision in step 3. Everybody think that's a great idea, right? Well, you can make that decision and live a life run on self-will, because the decision won't have any permanent effect unless at once to face and be rid of the things that are blocking you from God. And so how do you put yourself in order with your thinking? Steps 4, 5, 6, and 7, because you see how your thinking is out of order, how it's order when you're thinking and you're running your life, and how you want your thinking to be aligned with God's will, and how your resentment and your fears and your are wrong thinking. Anybody agree with that? And then we have shame and guilt from wrong actions. Now, if we have wrong thinking and we have wrong belief, we have wrong judgment and wrong beliefs, then we're going to act on them and we're going to have wrong actions. So the only way to stop doing wrong actions is to stop having wrong judgment and wrong belief. And to do that, you have to be able to see it and then stop and not allow that to dominate your thinking. That's what step 10 is all about. How you're watching for your thinking when it's separated from God and you want to stop. You don't want to act on it. And you want to cut it short right away. You don't want it to dominate you. So you go right to God and you say, well, I don't want to be afraid. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be impatient and tolerant. So you're doing 6 and 7 where you're asking God to remove your defects and practice His character. And you're doing that all day long in step 10. And you can't do that unless you're doing 4 and 5 where you can see that your thinking's wrong. And if you come in here and you don't do any work, you'll never see your thinking's wrong, but you'll still think everybody else's thinking is wrong. And nothing will happen. And you can want God to be your director, but he can't work in a mind that's blocked from Him. There you go, rambled again. So the miracle of the program of AA is that it has boiled all the principles of living down into these steps. These steps correct anything that is wrong with our thinking. Now, it says living, but our living's wrong when our thinking's wrong. And our living's good and right when our thinking's right. And the promise has come up after our three dimensions of lives are in order. So they're called the 9-step promises. It's fine. Who cares what they're called? But those are promises from God, from the Spirit. That's what the Spirit does for us. And so we realize God's doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And then we want to keep that going. Anybody like those promises? Anybody like feeling peace and at ease? Anybody not like not having fear in their lives? Good. So steps 10, 11 come along after that. And there, the book talks about the fourth dimension of existence on page 25. And it says, what does it say? Should have it memorized, getting old. It says, when we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there's nothing left for us but to pick up a simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. And that's a sentence that I see differently now today. The only way you're going to pick up the kit of spiritual tools if you see that there's nothing left for you to do. When you still have your own options and you still got your plan, then you're not going to pick them up. And then when you do, you've found much of heaven and you rocket it into a fourth dimension of existence. And the fourth dimension of existence for me is the existence where I had today, where I'm at peace. I'm at ease. I'm with God. And I'm not disturbed. And it's a dimension that keeps getting better the longer you practice it. And then you get disturbed. You say, well, where'd that come from? And then you work your 4, 5, 6, 7, and you're back with God. So we're so lucky, because most people are miserable, and they're not alcoholics, so they don't drink themselves to death. But they are not emotionally sober, and they don't have these steps. So we really have a gift. And the steps have really changed the world. There are a lot of 12-step programs out there. And I wrote, the promises will only stay true if you're in the world of the Spirit. And you can have the promises at 9 in the morning and be miserable at 10. But guess what? We don't have to stay miserable anymore. We have tools that we don't have to stay unhappy. We don't have to stay disturbed. Isn't that a gift? And it costs $5. The book's $5. Can you imagine? Read this book for $5. Do everything in it. You don't have to be disturbed anymore. It says in step 3, we have made the decision to turn our lives over to the will of God. And that's about as perfectly as I can do that. Here you go. You can have a seat. And all as perfectly as we could do that, right? But it says all I have to do is remove the things that block me from God. Yeah, actually, all I have to do is I don't even have to remove them. All I have to do is face and then ask God to be rid of them. And I have to face them. I have to see the things that are blocking me from God. And face and be rid of. And that happens. And so today, if anybody get impatient today about anything, or anybody bother them, there you go. Well, you're blocked from God because of your impatience. God didn't tell you to be impatient, did he? And then you're impatient, why? Because you're afraid you'll look bad and that people won't think you're great and all sorts of nonsense. And so, the only way we do that is through 4 through 9. And then the Spirit will grow. I don't think the Spirit really grows. We grow in understanding and effectiveness of the Spirit working in our life. If the Spirit grows, the mind will grow. And then when the mind grows, our relationships with other people and the rest of the physical world will grow too. This growth is unending. So the more you do it, the more you grow spiritually. The more you get closer to God, the more power you get in your life. The quicker you're able to get undisturbed, the quicker you're to be able to recognize. Remember, it says continue to take personal inventory. And when you're wrong, probably admit it, that you're quicker to see where your thinking is wrong. This step isn't about going around all day saying I'm wrong and I'm sorry, but that's some of it. But it's about seeing that when my thinking is wrong. And I admit it to God, myself, and if I need to, another human being. The growth is unending. Does anybody agree with that? It is. I'm doing better today than I was 10 years ago. I wish I had what I had today 15 years ago. My life at work would have been better. Their life would have been better. But you can only do what you can only do, right? Step 10 is the beginning of this growth in our lives. It's never ending. Step 10 is to enter a plan of continuous growth. So they use the word maintenance. I don't know what we're maintaining. We're maintaining continuous growth. Growth is continuous. So you're maintaining the action to continue to grow. I think that's what it is. You're maintaining the seeking of God. You're maintaining this pursuit of living the life that he has for you. You can't remain at a certain point. I believe that. Either go forward or backwards. And alcoholics can go back very quickly. I think we're the quickest go-backers that there are in the world. Because we pat ourselves on the back that we're doing so great. And once you do that, you're already going back. You don't even realize it. And he says, you look at a stone, the stone is actually deteriorating. That's why we practice these steps on a daily continuous basis. They're really the practice, practicing the inventory all the time, practicing getting God directing your life. And the more you practice it, the better you get at it. Now, in the beginning, you're not very good at it. And that's okay. How can you be good at it? Now, I was very good at being selfish. Anybody else good at that? I practiced it. I didn't, when I was 5 years old, I wasn't as selfish as I was at 20. And I got a lot better, right? I was very good at inconsideration. I mean, I was great. Well, Joe Charlie says, of course you were great. You practiced it all the time. And now you want to practice a different way. And as we practice a different way, we feel better. And our lives are better. And so we want to keep doing it. You're not going to keep doing this if it's not making your life better. If you don't feel more peace, you'll stop doing it. But if you do it, you will. So if you're not feeling it, you're not doing it. God, I don't know what I said. All right. A good, healthy step 10 is always based on how well we've understood 4 through 9. So that's why it's important. And I really believe just follow the steps right out of the book. Very simple. It worked for them. It'll work for me. It's worked for me. It'll work for you. So I don't need internet handouts and all that stuff and a lot of aftercare and all that. I just need the book and what's in it. Now, all that may be good and helpful to people. It helps them stay on the path. Some people can't work 10 because they haven't done the steps effectively and thoroughly, but I believe if you're trying to do them, you get the guidance from God and the person, people you're with, and you don't have to do it perfectly, but you have to make a beginning. And then steps 49 are the tools built in the step 10, and you get better at the tools. And I'll tell you what really helps is working with another person, because the more you work with someone else, the more you're doing the steps all the time. I've done a million 4 steps. I'm sick of doing my 4 steps, because whenever I do it with somebody else, I see the things. I see more, I can see things that I did and how I thought and patterns, and I don't want to be that way anymore. And then I recognize them right away today. That's why the program doesn't start with step 10, does it? And after step 3, it says next and at once, you're launched in a course of vigorous action. I've heard somebody say if you do everything in how it works and into action, you keep doing all the instructions, you'll never drink again. Well, I agree with that. How could you? Because God's not going to tell you to go drink. How can alcohol enter your mind when you're full of peace? It says, the inventory, we said, are things emanate from the inside out. They're really our character defects which cause our resentments. And really what causes my resentment is me planting my tree in Michael's soil. And then when I do that, all these character defects come out. And then I don't like the way people are treating me. I don't like the way people are looking at me. I judge people who I think they're better than me. You ever do that in a meeting? This guy brags all the time about how great he's doing, and then you resent him because he makes you feel bad because of your pride and your self-esteem. We're really sick people. But we look from the outside in. And so step 10 is whenever I see any kind of judgment or fear, I know that it's centered in Michael being the center of my life, and me and Michael saw, and not God, and that it triggers these character defects. And so we're going to trace them back. So that's what you do in 4 and 5. And then you do that every day in step 10. You do it automatically. And you don't have to make it very long either. Right away, you just say, boy, back in self. I'm wrong. That's wrong judgment. Give me patience and tolerance. Give me consideration. God save me from being angry. And you'll get tired of doing that. And you'll just say, well, wrong again, Michael. Let it go. Fear. Fear is the other thing. Fear isn't even true. Fear isn't even true. It's in the future. It's not even happening. So you're letting something in the future dominate your life. And why are you afraid? Because you're relying on you. And so I say, that's really stupid, Michael. You wasted half your life on fear. You're not going to do it anymore. And then I just say, stay in the now, right, with God. What do you want me to be right now? I wish I did it as well as I say, but I'm better than I used to be. Now, really, you can see progress. None of us get perfect because our self-will is always coming into play, but we watch for it now. And it says, having done it that way, when we come to step 10 each day throughout the day and throughout our lives, we use these tools when a resentment comes up. And you know, I've gone through at this meeting a million times the 4 prayers you say whenever you're angry and how you get free from anger with those 4 prayers. And then you can see people differently. You learn to forgive right away. I know I'm wrong when I'm angry. I'm never right. I don't have justified anger. Doesn't mean I excuse people's behavior, but I don't have to get upset by them. Most of our discomforts are caused by one of our grosser handicaps. And that's what we inventory, and that's resentment, fear, and guilt, and remorse for the actions we've done to harm people. Most of our uncomfortable feelings will fit under these categories. I think my whole life I was uncomfortable until I came to AA and I really started working the steps. But I was always ill at ease. I was always slightly, I don't know, I always had this feeling of underlying anxiety, this underlying fear. And some days it would be gone, but it was always kind of there, right at the edge. And I just wanted to be okay. I just wanted to feel okay. alcohol helped that for a while and other things, but now I can be okay just being Michael with God. I don't need people's approval anymore, just me and God. And I don't have to manage the world to feel okay. And it took me a long time to learn that. Anybody else manage their lives into complete misery? Yeah, I called a lot of bad plays. And our uncomfortable feelings is usually we don't like what we see, or we don't like how we feel, we don't like how we're being treated, or we don't like what we think's going to happen that hasn't happened yet. And we know it's going to be bad. They tell you at work that you're going to have a change, 8 o'clock. You're miserable. Every alcoholic assumes it's bad, right? It's got to be bad. What are they going to do to me now? Well, maybe they decide that they're going to do something good for you. But that never occurs to alcoholics. Am I the only one like that? Maybe I am sicker than others. Anyway, these uncomfortable feelings trigger fear. Remember, fear is the underlying evil and corroding thread throughout our whole life. And fear triggers all of our character defects. And what are our fears? We're not good enough. They don't like us. You know, we're not going to get enough love. And then in the end, it's, does God really love me? But once we learn God loves us, and God loves us unconditionally, then we don't need all that approval. And we just want to serve Him. And we want God esteem, not self-esteem. We want our esteem based upon our relationship with God, not on what we've done with others. When we feel something, you try to find out what it is. You say, I've got a resentment. Now, we don't have to figure out who did something to us, because that's going the wrong way. Instead, we try to see why we're threatened. And you're always threatened when you're in self, right? Because you're running the world. And so you can't change column 3. But we know something's being threatened, and then we can say which character defect has come to the surface. Usually it's pride and fear and self-esteem. They threaten your material security. You're going to get fired. They're going to make a change at work, and all of a sudden you're on the street. You can't make your house payments. They're going to take your car. Your wife will leave you. That happens. A good alcoholic can do that in about, 40 seconds. Yeah. You could sit there and be on the street in a month. Anybody else ever done that? Ever go home at night and you start worrying about something? And then before you know it, you're thinking of the worst thing that ever happened. I don't do that anymore. I used to do that a long time before but I haven't done that for years and years and years. So it's one of the things, selfishness, dishonesty, lack of consideration, fear, self-seeking. And those things come into play, then that produces these, that makes our life unmanageable. Right? It produces the resentment, the fears, and the harmful actions. And it's one of these things is happening, and then we ask God to remove it. We want to get back to Him. I can't be selfish and be with God in the now. I can't be fearful and with God right in the now. I can't be inconsiderate with God right in the now. If I'm in the now with God, I'll be loving, patient, kind, tolerant, considerate, compassionate. So if I'm not in the now, I'm back in me, and then I say, it's very simple, I need to get into the now. Step 10 is just get back into the now, Michael. It's 8 o'clock. Go to work. See the next patient. Anybody like to worry about the next day? Or I'm worried I'm not busy enough and I got 5 people to see. The nurses will say, well, maybe you should go see the next patient, doctor. You get it? I mean, I'm very easily... very easy to tell you how my defects were. I laugh about them now. But I wish I'd learned all this years and years and years ago. So it says early detection. Early detection is very important. We want to detect these things easily. We want to, early. We want to detect our resentments and what they mean and how they're triggered quickly, our fears. We want to detect our character defects very quickly. We don't want them to go on very long. And then it says when we catch ourselves in these patterns, we analyze them in our minds and deal with them because we've learned to do it in step 4. We learn prayers in step 4. We're on page 126. It says we're promised in the big book a new freedom. And what is the new freedom? It means I'm not in bondage to self. I don't have to be in bondage to my thinking. I want to be in bondage to God's thinking. I want to be a bondservant of the Lord. That's how Paul described himself. He was a bondservant to God. So I want to be a servant and a bondservant, but to God, not to me anymore. And I'm free to do that when I'm not a bondservant to me. Then I have the choice to be a bondservant of God. And it's really either or. Remember the question in the big book, it says, when we were crushed by an alcohol crisis, we could not postpone or evade. You're crushed. You became an alcoholic when you're crushed by this crisis. And it says we had to fearlessly face the question that God is what? Either everything or nothing. What is our choice to be? So my choice every minute is God everything in my life or nothing. If he's nothing, then I'm God. How's that working? So step 10 is really where you're asking yourself that question all day long. So whenever anything comes up and you're uncomfortable, God's nothing. Because if he's everything, then you trust him. You give him your life. You put your life in the God box. And he'll take care of you, give you everything you need if you stay close to him and do his work well. That's the contract that we have with God in step 3. So as soon as I feel resentment, say it's so-and-so's fault, I'm giving up my freedom. I'm in bondage to them. I'm turning the reins of my life back over to them. See, resentment is where I'm taking poison hoping you'll die. So you'll be sitting at home resenting or replaying something that happened during the day, but those people are at home watching Big Bang Happy. And you're miserable. You see how we do it? And they don't even exist unless we bring them into our heads. And so we have to learn not to do that. I don't want to bring junk into my head anymore. And so he says, I always hope it's my fault. Remember, it's my fault. I can change. If it's them, I can't change them. Remember, it says we selfish and self-centered. This is the root of our problem. And that we made decisions based on self that caused us to be harmed. And our problems are of our own making. They arise out of me. So everything that I see as a problem is my own making. You know why? Because who tells you it's a problem? You do. God doesn't say, problem, Michael, get upset, get disturbed. No, it's just a situation. So now, and Sandy Beach says it so well, we just have situations now. And we say, God, I have a situation. How do I deal with it? Instead of saying, once you say it's a problem, it's a problem. But if you say it's a situation, then you're seeing it differently. There's so much that we learn in the program. I'm just giving you glimpses of how this works. He says the key thing is to detect discomfort early, analyze it right away, and work your way right out of it. And if you need to, call somebody. Call somebody, talk about it. Now, I have people call me all the time and they tell me how great everything is. Well, that's not going to help them or me. I want to know what's bothering them during the day, what made them upset. And I'm always telling about myself because I love to talk about myself. And I'll tell them what bothered me or what disturbed me. And it helps me because I can see how silly it is. It's just ridiculous. And we see the advantage of immediately doing this, naming, analyzing, and letting go. Remember, we want to let go. The more we let go, the higher the balloon goes up, remember? And so we let go, and God takes it away. And we don't want to let them pile up and up. Most people learn pretty fast after a little early help. After a while, you get skilled at spotting trouble right away. Because you don't want it to build up. Because then what happens? Then you get very far from God. And then you don't have any power. And then you're driving home from work and you say, oh, been sober 30 days. Screw it. Nobody appreciates me. I work so hard. The wife doesn't love me anymore. Blah, blah, blah. And then you go get the drug. And then you say, how'd that happen? But that's how it happens. And it's scary. It could happen to me. None of us are immune. We don't want to get too far away from God. God's the power that keeps me sober, remember? I make a choice each day to seek the power that gives me choice. And so I'm like a magnet. I want to stay close to God. I don't want to get too far away. Then I'm back in Michael. And I want to tell you, when I came in, my life was a mess. I don't think anybody's life could have been worse than mine was. But people tell me there's worse, I don't know. It was as bad as I ever wanted to be, and I don't want to forget how bad it was. I can still remember all the fear and how terrible I felt. But I don't have to live that way anymore. And I can't express enough gratitude to all the people in AA and to God and everyone on now. I don't have to live like that anymore. And then it says we can get healthy. We can become a negative kind of self-centeredness. We can have interest in others, right? We can have purpose. People interpret the 10th step as you do it once a day. I've heard that a lot. Or you do it at night. I do my 10th step every night. Well, good, you screwed up the whole day. Good work. The inventory at night is to review how well you did the 10th step of the day. And it's on page 86, and it's the inventory at night in step 11. And then it says when you've done that, it says we ask God's forgiveness and what corrective measures we should use so we the next day we could do better. Remember, you don't do a perfect day and you get a certificate. You got to live every day the rest of your life, so you might as well live it well. And so step 10 is you just try to do it better each day. So step 10 is throughout the day. And he says you don't do it at night when you're asleep because you don't get in trouble when you're asleep. It does say that when we hurt somebody, we want to admit it. And it's here at the bottom of 127, we admit to ourselves we are once again a troublesome, uncomfortable behavior way of thinking. That's the key. And if I'm in the world of the Spirit, I watch with God for that. And I can see when I'm in this troublesome, uncomfortable way of thinking. Does that make sense? And then I don't want to stay there. Now, why don't I want to stay there anymore? Because I don't want to feel bad. And so he says, what does he say? Is this good stuff? Mm-hmm. Pretty practical. We don't have discussion yet.
Sorry.
I'm recording this. Usually when we have physical pain, we know it indicates something is wrong, and we stop immediately to see what we can do to relieve it. With emotional pain, we sometimes just take it on and try to live with it instead of trying to find out what is causing it. But emotional pain is a sign that something's wrong, right? Pain is a symptom in both cases. When we have emotional pain, we should be aware that something has gone wrong or is about to go wrong. Now, what I wrote is, what does go wrong mean? See, when I'm in emotional pain, I see things as wrong. I see things as being wrong. They may not be. They may be okay, right? But I've decided it's wrong and is about to go wrong. That means in the future. Get it? And we don't know that. It's true, right? So when I'm aware that something's gone wrong or is about to go wrong, I'm already wrong because I don't even know if it's true. So that's when I need to talk about it with someone or I need to go to God. But I've learned to work the step enough to know when I see something has gone wrong, it's the way I react to it. I have to react differently to it. You don't want to sleep it under the rug, he says. And I think I'm going to stop there and finish up on Saturday. Stu, you got a pen? And so, I appreciate you listening, and we'll pick it up on Saturday.